because all of our members, some members are getting off the floor later in the House, but I respect very, very much people coming from long distances to testify. So if you don't mind, Senator Gordley and I will gladly begin the testimony so that all of you who've come to be heard, we want to make sure that that is done. A way to manage this process, since we have approximately 50 people to speak, and that is that everybody has to show some constraint and some control. When you do not do that, then what you will see Ms. Baker do is wrap up, please, and you'll have 30 seconds after that to complete your testimony.
How many minutes?
2 minutes. And we're doing 2 minutes each for everybody so that everybody can be heard. If we had more minutes and we could do it differently, we would do that. But the committee lasts from 1 o'clock until 2:30, then another committee comes in after us. So what I'd like to do is ask you to respect your two-minute time, and when you don't, we will do this, and I might have to say your time is up, and I really hate interrupting you, but we have to in order to manage the process. We're there?
Yeah.
And when people get through, I know everybody has a tendency to want to clap because I did such a good job. Join me. Okay? Thank you. Thank you very much. I'd like to call the first witness, Dr. Janet Carlson, the Marion County Commissioner. Oh, yes. And I'd like to announce that there's an overflow room in Hearing Room B. In Hearing Room B. Where's the sign-up sheet? They don't have a sign-up sheet. Okay. I know we won't get to you if you sign up, because we already have 50-some-odd here. Okay. Thank you. As a means of being able to process this process, because so many of our legislators are in other committees and have to go, so if you will be kind enough to allow me to call legislators who've come, and I see Representative Gelzer, who's here, you can come up with Dr. Carlson, who's going to be speaking as well. Thank you very much. 2 minutes for everybody. We'll go from there, but I understand we need to allow Dr. Carlson a few more minutes, since she's the opening person to explain this process. Go for it.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee, Dr. Janet Carlson, Marion County Commissioner, and Chair Carter, since we've had our conversation about doctor, I also provided you a little bit of background about my credentials on the cover page, so that is to help save time so people know the different ways that I've been involved with the system. I also brought some testimony from Commissioner Bill Hall from Lincoln County and Tony Hyde from Columbia County, who couldn't be here today, but wanted to share some information with the committee. In the fall of 2004, I got this idea that perhaps some of the candidates and incumbents from our Marion County delegation ought to see some of the programs and initiatives that we were working on in our county. So we started to organize the event. I called Senator Jackie Winters and asked her if she would co-host with me. And in her inimitable style, Senator Winters said, they need to go to jail. And so since I'm from Marion County and we run the Marion County Jail, I said that can be done. So in addition to the Relief Nursery and Healthy Start visits and seeing other nonprofit programs in our county, Vicki Berger, Kim Thatcher, Max Sumner, there a number of other candidates and incumbents at the time went to jail. And there we saw, I can't remember the exact amount, but somewhere between 25 to 35 very young women. I was impressed with the youth of the women, when not shy about talking about their situations. Many of them involved with child welfare, many of them involved with meth, some involved with identity theft, a lot of them in their pretrial or somewhere on their way to Coffee Creek. And I remember the moment when Representative Vicki Berger said, so what did you need that would have kept you from getting in here? And all of a sudden, the conversation turned to family support programs, parenting programs, after-school activities for their children, things that I know I've been involved in working on with the commission system since I got involved in this work in 1991. And when I told them that we had a grant coming from the federal government for children of incarcerated parents, the group actually applauded. They were so excited to hear that there would be something there for supports. This whole situation caused me to ponder a quote that Senator Bates, he was quoted in the Statesman Journal, sometime during that sixth special session in 2003, and he said, "When someone is bleeding on the operating table, you don't ask them to lower their cholesterol or exercise." We didn't have a lot of good choices during those five special sessions in the 2001-02 and the sixth one in 2003. We made some gut-wrenching decisions to eliminate programs. But what happened to local communities and children and families during those six special sessions is that they lost 50% of their local flexible funds. And I provided a spreadsheet that's attached to the handout that, that I provided you. And if I could just show you where the local flexible funds are tallied, which is right the first block. And if you go across, you can see that it, by the end of 0103, it was a 26% cut, although that doesn't, I don't think that includes all the special sessions. And when you go down to 0305, there's the 50% reduction. What that means for us in Marion County, and I think that people across the state would agree, is that the community work that these commissions were intended to do has been compromised a great deal. Certainly, we need the funding for the staff and the staff support for the commissions. We also need flexible funds to be able to initiate a lot of the good programs and services that can only be done at a local community level. I'll give you an example. We're trying to create, I've been working since a year ago February to create a Center for Family Success in Salem. We got a house through the Salem Alliance Church, and it was available last January. We pulled together 25 partners, held 25 meetings. We have 25 agreements. People are ready to provide services, but we don't have money for a coordinator. All we need is about $100,000 for this coordinator. I spent my last weekend, about 12 hours, writing a grant to the federal government that won't come if we get it until October. But those are the kinds of things that the local commission used to put in to help birth a project until they could get their own grant writer and get on their way. Dick Withnell, who's our businessman extraordinaire, and you'll get to hear from him tomorrow, has a list, and it just keeps getting longer, of different types of needs that we have in our community and is trying to raise money. But these are things that we could have done in 1999 at the level of funding we had then and what we cannot do now. Now, I want to make the point that we absolutely need the programs that you're going to hear about today. Healthy Start, relief nurseries, and we need to be able to roll out those relief nurseries statewide, not just stay where we are, and court-appointed special advocates. But we also absolutely need to make progress towards those flexible funds that are essential to communities. You will hear from folks that are asking for $3 million in basic capacity funds. That is a small amount of the restoration. And the last point that I want to make, and I'll invite you to take a look at the chronology and the statutes that show the vision of what this legislature has adopted for kids, and then the last page, which is the eight-stage process of creating major change. This is a book called Leading Change by John Cotter from the Harvard Business School. We have in our state the vision. We have the guiding coalition. It is the commission system. We have the strategy. What we need now is the political will to empower broad-based action that will achieve the results for our children and families that Oregon so desperately needs at this time. And I thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Representative Sarah Gelser, and I represent House District 16, which includes Corvallis and Philomath and Benton County. Hi. I briefly wanted to come before you today to express my support for the Commission on Children and Families budget, and in particular, two pieces that are very important to my community and I believe to children across the state of Oregon, and those are the relief nurseries and also the court-appointed special advocates. As the previous speaker noted, it's important that we don't just maintain the status quo with our relief nurseries, but that we have the ability to roll those out across the state and provide those resources to children in need across the state. In my legislative district, we have a relief nursery that's ready to go. It's ready to open, pending its funding. It's a great collaboration of nonprofit community resources and just needs that support to be able to offer those important safety services to the children and the families that need them. As you also know very well, the court-appointed special advocates really are a blessing. There's no other word that hits that so well. They are a blessing.
And also, we gave you $1 million more than you asked for. But $1 million more than you asked for CASA.
And I'm glad that you did, and I want to thank you for doing that, because these kids, when they are in the system, they desperately need that voice that's speaking for the needs and the interests of the child, which sometimes is different than the needs and the interests of the state or of their families. So I thank you for your support of the causes, and encourage you to maintain that support and commitment that you've shown to them. I know there are a lot of competing priorities, but for the kids of Oregon, that's very important, as are those relief nurseries. So thank you for your work and your commitment. And with that, I thank you.
Thank you, Representative. Elizabeth Underwood, Casey Gibson, Yadira Paz, and Kim Simmons.
Thank you.
So as you get there, you just get started.
Sure. Good afternoon, Chair Carter, members of the committee. My name is Elizabeth Underwood. I'm the Director of Healthy Start in Marion County at Catholic Community Services. In Marion County alone, Healthy Start reduces the rate of child abuse and neglect from 37 in 1,000 children for the average population to 17 in 1,000 children for Healthy Start families. That's by more than half. And yet, since July 1st of 2006, we've turned away 344 families in Marion County eligible for Healthy Start because there's not enough capacity in the program. I have to say here, Healthy Start is not my program or the commission's or Karen Van Tassel's. It is our program. Collectively, together, we in this room can lift it up, give it the support and funding to be the powerful vehicle for safer, healthy young children and families that you, the legislators, intended it to be. We, each of us, have an opportunity to do so much good for our families and communities across the state. Communities glad to raise the 25% match funding. I urge you to recognize this opportunity to unleash the power of Healthy Start across the state, support, and lift it up with restorative funding. Please hear from three of our Healthy Start families about the difference Healthy Start has made in their lives, beginning with Yadira Paz and her interpreter here.
Do you want me to start? Hello, my name is Yadira Paz. I live here in Salem, Oregon, and this is my son, Michael. He's 15 months old, and I've been working with Healthy Start since I was pregnant with my first baby, whom I lost to premature birth. She was born early, 3 months early. She passed away, and I was so happy once I became pregnant with Michael, and I believe God blessed me. My Healthy Start worker came back to work with me while I was pregnant with Michael. I was about 4 or 5 months along with Michael, and I found out I had gestational diabetes, and I had a lot of swelling in my legs and my feet, and I became a high-risk pregnancy, and I had to work hard to take care of myself. I had to give myself insulin shots, and I had to go in to have regular tests done twice a week. I was so concerned that I could possibly lose my child again, and my Healthy Start worker helped me understand a great deal about the pregnancy and supported me. And once Michael was born, she also helped me to understand about changing a diaper, to feeding schedules, and just how to birth him. And I was having some overwhelming thoughts and cried a lot, and it was very hard to take care of the whole household. And it was wonderful to have Healthy Start there to support me. And I wasn't even sure how I was going to communicate with Michael. And Peggy encouraged me and taught me how to communicate with him. And wrapping it up, my child had eczema, a skin rash, and I worried a great deal about him and took him to the doctor and was able to get him treated for it. But it was very scary. Now, My goal is to get Michael into a preschool program so he can learn how to speak, enunciate his words correctly. I'm doing my best, but I can't speak well, and so that's my next goal, is just to get him onto continued Healthy Start.
Thank you very much, Adira.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Chair Carter and members of the committee, I'm just going to read really quickly what I wrote so I don't take up too much of your time. My name is Casey Gibson, and I am from Silverton, Oregon. This is my daughter, Emma, and she is 17 months old. We have gotten Healthy Start home visits for almost 2 years. My husband and I want to be different kinds of parents than the parents we grew up with. My mom was severely depressed and pretty much slept my entire childhood. My dad was an alcoholic, and my husband's parents are junkies. My husband was always moving as a kid, so he never got to make friends. His stepdad went to prison, and his mom went to jail. He went back and forth between his parents. We want to provide Emma with more stability and routine. It wouldn't be fair to her if she had to go through what we had to go through. My husband also has a son that he can't see and doesn't want to make that mistake again. I think we both value our kids more than the average person. I wanted kids for many years and was devastated when I found out that I couldn't have kids. I don't take my daughter for granted, and I feel very blessed. When I got pregnant with Emma, it was a surprise because I was told I couldn't have kids. At the time, I was working and in school. Being pregnant changed everything. It was the biggest stress that our marriage could have gone through. It was a huge transition. When we got together, we weren't expecting to have kids. We used to have a lot of fun. We are outdoors people and like to do things we can't do now. My husband was a wild one into drugs, and I told him we couldn't stay together unless he got clean. Now he leads a very different life. We want to provide Emma with stability and routines and a very different life than that. My husband says before Emma was born, he used to buy at least 2 CDs every paycheck, and now he buys about 2 CDs a year. Thank you. Healthy Start, I'll wrap it up, makes a big difference in my life. Like I said, we were on a very different path, and now we are in a complete opposite path. And it's really hard to get through some of that without the support and positive reflection and encouragement that my Healthy Start lady provides for me. I have actually went through very depressing stages having my daughter. And as blessed as I feel, it's really hard when you are not expecting that at all. And I would want other families to be able to get the same encouragement and support and benefits that I get that are extremely important to me, and things that are so life-changing. So
I appreciate you very much.
Thank you. Thank you for your time.
Thanks.
The next thing I'm going to do, people, is...
When I found out I was pregnant with my first child on March 14th, 2006, I was a drug-addicted, homeless mess.
Would you introduce yourself?
I am Cherish Keir. Sorry. I'm from Polk County, and I'm a participant in Healthy Start. Coming from an abusive and broken home, I wanted nothing more than to break this vicious cycle and to provide this innocent child with the life that she deserved. Today, I have a healthy, beautiful, and happy 8-month-old daughter. I've been clean and sober since March 14, 2006. I have stable housing and the knowledge and confidence to be the mother I always dreamed I could be. My daughter gave me the motivation. Healthy Start gave me the tools. Healthy Start helped with every aspect of our lives, offering continual support and information regarding everything from basic needs, such as food, clothing, housing, and medical, to infant care and development. They even helped with my long-term career and education goals. Born 3 months premature due to severe preeclampsia, my daughter is almost completely caught up in her development, thanks to Healthy Start. I urge you to vote to give more funds to this program so that more families may have the tools to become successful parents. 48 families in Polk County who wanted help last year were turned away due to lack of funding. Our children are the pride of our present and the hope for our future. A vote for Healthy Start is a vote for a healthy future. Thank you.
I'm trying to get people 100 miles away. That the woman here from Ontario.
Yes, there they are.
Then I'd like to call along with her Charlene Paramo, yeah, Jennifer Barr, and Scott Edwards. Go ahead, sir.
Four of you guys. Well, greetings from Malheur County, onion capital of the world.
All right.
My name is Kelly Poe, and I'm the director of the Malheur County Commission on Children and Families. Malheur County is a beautiful place to live, to raise a family, and to play. I've come from the southeastern corner of the state to talk to you about Senate Bill 5504. In Malheur County, the basic capacity grant provides the work that no other agency or individual is able to accomplish. In the midst of the highest poverty in the state, we have consistently experienced child poverty for over 30 years. As in other areas, meth and gangs are devastating our families. The Commission on Children and Families is coordinating and facilitating collaborative projects through the comprehensive planning process. We're working to strengthen our CASA program and to create a better system of support for all children and youth who experience homelessness. Without a federal grant, but with a strong collaborative effort, we now have a juvenile drug court. We created the foundation for an out-of-school time program that will serve all kids. We've assisted the Oregon Food Bank to establish a Southeast Oregon Regional Food Bank and local pantries in all the communities. But today I want to tell you one of our success stories. The commission system paved the way for a strong force called the Malheur Partnership for Children of Incarcerated Parents. They initiate collaborative work such as the Pathfinders Parenting Class for parents who are on probation or parole and involved in child welfare. They're also advocating for a relief nursery to serve at-risk families. This will be the first relief nursery to be located on a college campus in the state of Oregon. The Children of Incarcerated Parents Partnership began almost 2 years ago with a vision and a dream to improve the outcomes of children who have family members involved in the criminal justice system. When they learned about the relief nursery model, they immediately put it on the list of projects they wanted to undertake. So our relief nursery will integrate the corrections facility, community needs, and the education system of Treasure Valley Community College. The vision in our community is that TVCC Early Childhood Department can build an early childhood lab school that will not only be a relief nursery classroom, but it will also be a training environment for future teachers who will learn how to work with at-risk families. This is the type of collaboration around the desired goals of the community that the Malheur Commission on Children and Families work does. But we cannot do it without your support. We need your help. Please support Senate Bill 5504. I have written testimony of
thank you. Next,
Senator Carter, a member of the committee, I can't talk today. I'm Charlene Paramo. I am the executive director of the Roseburg Relief Nursery, and I'm also chair of the Oregon Association of Relief Nurseries this year. We've given you a packet, and it's my job to sort of just plow through it and let you know some of the things that we do about our program. Relief nurseries work with the highest risk families in the state of Oregon. The state defines a family as being high risk if they have five or more risk factors. Our families average 24 risk factors last year alone. We have 9 nurseries currently in the state of Oregon. You've heard from 2 others, and there are more who want to have sites. We also have 4 nurseries who would like to expand further into other communities. Last year alone, relief nurseries served 2,500 families, and we have 900 children on our waiting list waiting for services. Keeping families together and children out of foster care is a priority for relief nurseries.
Last year alone, we had several children return from foster care, and very few children went into foster care. And when you look at this packet, you'll see that these numbers would be impressive if we were just speaking of the general population. But remember that the population we serve is 7 times more at risk. We also provide Accessing Success, which is a drug and alcohol recovery support program, and that is at 3 relief nurseries. That's highlighted in your packet. Meth has caused quite a demand for relief nursery services, and 2 of our nurseries in Salem and in Eugene have entered into partnerships with drug courts in Marion County and Lane County, and we're pleased to report that we're already seeing success in these programs. As of March, 11 moms in Salem and 3 in Eugene have graduated from the program, and all of them have had their children returned to them. One of the things that's important to remember is that costs go up if relief nursery services are not provided. By keeping families together, it not only helps the families, but it helps the state budget. This chart is on page 9, and it talks to you about providing families with intensive help that they need in order to keep them out of the more expensive foster care, juvenile justice, and adult correction systems. And lastly, I just wanted to tell you that to help expand relief nursery services, the governor's budget would have added the equivalent of $100,000 per year per nursery. This would have allowed us enough money to open up classrooms in all of the nurseries and serve those 900 children we were talking about on the waiting list. Without that money, we could lose those slots, and the state's most vulnerable children and families would stay on the waiting list. The co-chair's budget has cut $1.9 million from the governor's budget, and this would also mean that the satellite sites and the new nurseries might not come into existence this year. Relief nurseries work. We strengthen families. We keep children and families together, children out of foster care, and we prevent abuse and neglect. Please restore our funding.
My name is Scott Edwards. I'm a technical operations manager for Comcast in Eugene, and I'm here to speak about our involvement with Relief Nursery. You might wonder why Comcast Cable is involved with an organization like Relief Nurseries. Well, every day our cable technicians are in and out of people's homes. They see firsthand at-risk children in our communities. Until we found Relief Nurseries, many of our employees had a sense that there was little that could be done to remedy what they often witnessed. I can't tell you how often at the end of a day a tech entered my office and said, "Boss, isn't there anything we can do?" And that's why we became involved with the Relief Nurseries. We've organized work parties, a reading and literacy outreach, and helped to provide financial support to the Relief Nursery. When it comes to the Relief Nursery, I don't have to twist arms for support. All we have to do is just mention the name Relief Nursery, and the support is there. Comcast is proud to be involved with helping the Relief Nursery address the serious needs of at-risk children, needs that we've seen firsthand. By law, Relief Nurseries must raise a 25% cash match for any state appropriation. Our nurseries far exceed that goal, as you can see on page 6 of the handout. This biennium, 2005 to 2007, the state allocated $3.4 million to Relief Nurseries. The nurseries used that to leverage more than $11 million in local contributions and grants. Comcast is proud to be a part of that community support.
Thank you.
Hello, I'm Jennifer Barr, a resident of rural Cottage Grove and a mother of 7, 5 of whom live in my home. I'd like to show you a picture of my 5 boys, whom I'm very proud of, and then show you this page from your handout. This page struck my husband and I very deeply when we saw the handout, because we looked at the pictures of our boys and thought at any point in time they could have become one of these statistics or part of these systems. At the time of our self-referral to the Relief Nursery in Cottage Grove, our family met several of the high-risk factors, as well as having 3 children under the age of 3 and being a twice-blended family. Since that time, our 6 and 8-year-old son have been referred to an amazing child counselor. Our twin 2-year-old sons have attended a toddler class once a week that has strengthened their social and verbal skills, as well as their preschool learning.
We've been referred to numerous community social services and resources. We've attended parenting classes that have not only taught us new techniques, but have helped us to see what we were already accomplishing positively. Last but not least, we felt compassion and understanding in a time when it was very hard to admit that we needed help. We used and participated, in all of the core programs and at least two of the additional services provided by the Relief Nursery. The Relief Nursery staff and services have allowed our postpartum family, under extreme financial, physical, mental, and emotional stress, to begin transitioning back into stability.
You're doing good.
Thank you. They've been the extra set of hands. With twins, you need it. The extra set of teachers and listeners, and a vast referral resource of amazing and empowering body for our family in need and other families such as ourselves. They've helped to keep our children from furthering these statistics. Thank you.
Thank you.
Representative Bush. Just very briefly, I wanted to comment on that same pictorial that you put up, how strikingly that shows us how little bit of money spent up front in primary prevention can save a lot of money at the other end. It's the classic pay us now, pay me now, or pay me later. Pay for me now, or pay for me later.
Thank you for
bringing that up.
Thank you very much. Pam Sorensen, Jamie Kidd, and Billy Watson.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Pam Sorensen. I'm the director of the Marion County CASA program. Madam Chair, yeah, we are very enthused about the additional $1 million that you've got in our budget for this session. I realize as you get closer to the end of the session and you need to be making pretty tight decisions about what you're going to do with your money, I'm very, very hopeful that you will keep that $1 million in the budget for CASA for the next biennium. In the meantime, I wanted to make sure that you understand why it's important that we keep CASA. I would like you to recognize the more than 1,500 CASA advocates that are standing with me here today in this room and around the state as volunteers representing abused and neglected children in juvenile court. I'd like you to recognize the economic impact of CASA, to recognize the fact that children who have CASAs in their juvenile cases get better services because the services offered to the children are more tailored to the children's needs. That is a better expenditure of tax dollars. I'd also like you to recognize that families who have a CASA engaged in the juvenile case engage themselves better in the system. Parents are more likely to attend court and more likely to engage in services. And again, that is a more efficient use of our tax dollars. Most importantly, children who have a CASA in their juvenile case are less than half as likely to re-enter juvenile court care and foster care. And that is tax dollars avoided. So economically, CASA offers a significant benefit to the community. Private support leverages state dollars for CASA by an average of 4-1 across the state. So as you are contemplating what to do with the budget for the next biennium, we recognize you've given us a raise. We encourage you to please keep that raise in the budget for next biennium. The next speaker is a young woman who's here with me. As I'm talking about the economic viability of CASA, Jamie Kidd is here to tell you today about the human value of the CASA program.
Thank you, Pam. Madam Chair and committee members, as I sit before you today, I'm a woman who has been happily married for 11 years. I have three beautiful, healthy children. I'm involved in my community. I've served on my school board for 7 years, but that wasn't necessarily the path that I grew up in. When I was a child, I grew up in a home with a single mother who was disabled. She used a variety of illegal substances to try to set her mind at ease, which created a whole other issue of problems that I'm sure you're aware of. At 5 years old, I was raped. I had been molested by five other men before I had turned 11. I was physically, mentally, and emotionally abused as a child. I didn't grow up with the skills
or the path and support to be the person that I sit before you today. I came to be the woman that I am today by support of numerous people, one major being my CASA advocate. Having a CASA saved me from being ordered to return back home to my parents at age 15, which was the second time that I had been in foster care. The first time was at 8, when I did not have a CASA representative, and I was put back in the home. She helped me identify and articulate my needs and feel free to stand up for myself in court, a feeling that I had never had before, that I actually existed. She helped me change my direction from where I grew up to where I knew somewhere in my heart that I could be. At age 15, as I said, my second time in the system, I was fortunate enough to receive a court-appointed advocate. She validated my thoughts that my life was chaotic and that I had a right to choose something else. She stood up for me when I was unable to stand up for myself. She taught me how to speak for myself. Having a CASA educated me on my rights and empowered me to speak my truth. Thank you so much for funding the CASA program. Thank you.
Sir, we're done.
Madam Chair, I'm Billy Wasson, members of the committee. It's indeed a privilege to be here today. I'm here to speak in favor of the Oregon Commission on Children and Families Juvenile Crime Prevention Program. For the past nearly 8 years, I've been privileged to serve on the Juvenile Crime Prevention Advisory Committee, first being appointed by Governor Kitzhaber and then reappointed by Governor Kulongoski. I am a volunteer in that program, and when I retired from the adult criminal justice system after a 30-plus year career, I looked for some place to serve at the prevention end of the system. Having served at the adult setting, I said, it's time to look at the prevention end, and that's where we should invest our time and energy. And I appreciate your comments, Representative Boone, in that regard just a moment ago. The Juvenile Crime Prevention Advisory Committee and the programs that it serves is a good investment. I'm here to encourage you to support the governor and the co-chair's budget in that regard. It's been a wild ride the last several bienniums with the cuts we've endured, but I'm glad to see that the state's budget can see some reinvestment in this valuable program. It's humbling for me to sit in the back of the room and listen to the rest of the family of the commission family here. The Juvenile Crime Prevention Program is a relative newcomer to the family of the commission programs. And it's taken me a while to, and I'm still learning about what the family of the commission's programs are and really how important it is that this juvenile crime prevention program, how well it fits in that, particularly the prevention aspect of it. So to wrap up my comments here, it's a privilege to serve and volunteer at this end of the system. I encourage your support of the budget as it is currently before you, and I look forward to building on it in the future. Thank you.
Thank you very much for being here. I want to let all of you know that you're speaking to the choir. This is the one committee that loves this program, so feel comfortable when you come here. We know the intricacies and everything else of it. We're having a public testimony so you can have a chance to breathe sense of support.
Thank you, Senator.
You bet. Senator Winters, I'll just keep it very short, but I just...
Can I just call the next group while you...
Sure, before you do that.
Okay. Thank you, guys.
I just need to acknowledge Mr. Wasson. I'm glad that he and I worked together a lot of years and years ago, and I'm glad that you're staying involved and engaged and that you have traded the adult system for the juvenile system and that you're volunteering your time. Thanks, Billy.
Thank you. It's so good to see your health so much better, Jackie. Nice to
see you. Trini Townsend, Vicki Bujati, Debbie Baskin, and Denise Webster, Cheryl DeHart. Looks like this panel all wanted to come up together, so I just call all of you to squeeze in as you can. Okay, while they're coming, somebody can get started.
Thank you, Chair Carter.
There's over there, and there's one chair here on the side.
Thank you, Chair Carter, and members of the subcommittee. I am Vicki Bujati, Director of the Union County Commission on Children and Families, and I am here today to request your support of Senate Bill 5504, with priority given to the $3 million for basic capacity. For the past 18 months, I have been working with the LaGrande School District Homeless Liaison to raise local awareness and coordinate community efforts to address the issue of homelessness in rural communities. This unfunded responsibility was handed to school districts through the federal No Child Left Behind Act. Together, we have made over 40 presentations, traveling to Malheur, Crook, and Wasco counties to talk about our work. Through a partnership with OHSU School of Nursing at Eastern Oregon University, a community readiness assessment was completed in the 5 remaining school districts in Union County. 3 of them had not been reporting their numbers to the Department of Education as required by law, and only one had a liaison identified. Outcomes resulting from Union County's basic capacity investment are, today, 6 of 6 school districts have an identified liaison, 6 of 6 districts reported homeless numbers in 2006. 14 of 24 unaccompanied high school seniors graduated from LaGrande High School in 2006. And unaccompanied youth is defined as youth living entirely on their own. And in 2007, 9 of 13 unaccompanied seniors are on track to graduate. Finally, the Wasco County Commission on Children and Families and community partners are collaborating on their own county plan to address homelessness. We've made a lot of progress, but much remains to be done. A basic capacity increase of $3 million would allow Commission staff to follow up with the 5 rural school districts. The Commission's ability to raise awareness and involve local residents is an untapped resource for our schools who are struggling to meet an unfunded mandate of No Child Left Behind. Thank you.
Thank you. Madam Chair and members of the subcommittee, I am Bernice Webster. I'm here as a partner with the Union County Commission on Children and Families in the Runaway Homeless Youth in Transition Project. I am a member and an elder of the First Christian Church. When we asked how we could help, we were told it is difficult to access food in our community. So we cleared out a cupboard and established a food pantry. Mine is not the only congregation to get involved. Zion Lutheran Church has partnered with my church to distribute Easter baskets to every student on the homeless list. Valley Fellowship stores hygiene products and household goods. The Underground Oasis, a 12-step faith-based congregation, stores clothing, and their members mentor parents who are struggling with substance abuse, which affects over 75% of these families. Neighbor to Neighbor Ministries and the Catholic Church provide meal cards when schools are closed and free breakfast and lunch is not available. In addition, over $20,000 in cash and $9,000 in school supplies has been donated. It took a recognized organization like the Commission on Children and Families with staff time and networking capabilities to raise local awareness and mobilize the community. I encourage you to support Senate Bill 5504 and particularly the $3 million earmarked for basic capacity. Engaging average citizens to become part of the solution is the role legislators envision for the commission from the beginning. Our local commission has rallied the community so these students can be fed, clothed, sheltered, and continue their education. Your support of Senate Bill 5504 is essential so these efforts can be expanded. Thank you.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Chair Carter, members of the committee. First, I just want to tell you I would not want to have your jobs right now. I'm thinking I like my own very much.
It's a tough one.
Yeah. My name is Cheryl Dehart, and I'm from Wasco County. And I'm here today to give testimony supporting the need of full funding for the $3 million increase in basic capacity that will support local commissions, which is included in Senate Bill 5504. as the executive director for Child, doing business as the Dallas Smart Reading and Book Program. I have received both financial and ongoing technical support from Wasco County Commission on Children and Families. Our local commissions has been instrumental in the growth and development of the Dallas Start Making a Reader Today program. In October, with their assistance, we became our own nonprofit organization called Child, which allowed us to open up our doors to give assistance to other programs who meet our mission. In addition to SMART, we are now the fiscal agent for Reach Out and Read, which is another program that began with the assistance of our commission. Our growth would not be possible without the support from Wasco County Commissions. With their guidance, we learned how to build lasting community partnerships that now provide the stability we need to reach out to the children of the community who are at risk of low literacy, and also to educate the parents about the importance of literacy in child development. When you look at all of the programs we have in Wasco County that support our local children in need, they have all been started with the assistance of the commission. They are more than support. They are a friend to every child and family who need a little assistance to get by. Without our local commissions, our unemployment rate, child abuse, and even our third grade reading benchmark scores would not be improving as they are today. I strongly urge that you consider the need for Senate Bill 5504. As a working mother and wife raising three children in a loving two-parent household, I am the exception. I sit before you today as the voice for all children in my community who come from a single-parent home, who have been abused or neglected, or are children who live in foster care. They deserve a chance to become successful members of our community, but they need extra support from our community to achieve this. With the approval of Senate Bill 5504, Wasco County Commissions will be there to offer that assistance. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
And I have these. Can I leave them? Thank you.
Chair Carter and members of the committee, my name is Trudy Kaplan, and I live just outside of the Dalles, and I'm the administrator in Wasco County for the Commission on Children and Families. And I'm here today to ask you for your full support of Senate Bill 5504, just like everybody else. What I want to talk to you about is our concern that the co-chair's budget zeroed out the increase for basic capacity. And I understand that the term basic capacity, it just shouts administration. And if I was sitting in your chair, I'd want to cut anything that shouted administration. I really would. So I understand that. But I've brought some of my very favorite partners who do some of my very favorite work in Wasco County to share with you about what basic capacity means to us in Wasco County. The commission system, administration is just a teeny, teeny, tiny part of what we do. It's like the fly on my wall that I want to swat all the time because I want to be out there doing the mobilization work and working with partners like Cheryl DeHart and like Debbie Baskins who are working on behalf of the children. What we do, what we are about, is making a positive difference for kids. We look at the system, we look at the needs for the kids, and then we go about strategizing with our partners to make a difference. I've worked with our partners in the court system to make huge differences for kids in foster care. I've seen the judge order from the bench to have the attorneys bring their calendars to court. Do you know what a difference that makes? Attorneys actually make appointments with their families, and families get something done. It's incredible to see that stuff happen in our community, and it really wouldn't happen without the commission. And without that increase in basic capacity, the commissions are going to slowly die. That basic capacity, in fact, they're going to quickly die. Basic capacity is the backbone of our system. I just ask that you reconsider that line item specifically. Thank you so much for your support of our work.
Good afternoon. My name is Debbie Baskins, and I'm the program director for Columbia Gorge CASA, which serves Hood River, Wasco, and Sherman counties. And I'm here today asking you to support the full funding of SB 5504, which includes a $1 million increase for CASA and a $3 million increase in basic capacity to support local commissions. Basic capacity funds are the foundation of the entire commission system. Adequate support for strong local commissions is essential for all other commission programs to be successful and effective, including CASA. Basic capacity funds supports commissions in developing local solutions to local problems. The Wasco County Commission has been actively involved in the Juvenile Court Improvement Project and the Relative Search Family Find Training. Both projects improve outcomes for kids who are in the custody of the state and in foster care. There are more than 100 children in Wasco and Hood River counties on a wait list for a CASA volunteer. Your support of SB 5504 and the $1 million increase to CASA will help us recruit and train more CASA volunteers to be a voice in court for every child in dependency court. Thank you.
Thank you for being here.
Sally Packer-Aiken and Dave Giannotti.
Thank you, everyone, for being here. I'm Sally Packer-Aiken, and I'm from the beautiful Hood River Valley, and I'm a third-generation orchardist. And I'm here to support the basic capacity money. A lot of people don't understand why an orchardist would see it so necessary for basic capacity with children and families. But it affects everyone. When my kids went to school, Hood River had one of the highest rates for dropouts. It didn't matter what, but Hood River was standing up there. Kids were dropping out left and right. And we were probably one of the highest for Hispanic dropouts. Right now, we're one of the lowest in the nation. And it is because of basic capacity money. It is the heart of all the programs. And if you don't keep it there, the heart will quit beating. And CPR only works a third of the time. And, you know, we really need it. And one last year, my husband came to me, and it was the first day of school, and it was Anjo season. And he said, "I have two boys here." And I says, "What do you mean you have two boys?" He says, "Antonio's boys came to work." And I says, "Today's first day of school." And he says, "Yep, they're not going back." These were 15 and 16-year-old boys. I called up the commission, who called up the high school. When Antonio and his family got home that night, they had a phone call, and they had an advocate at their house to talk to the boys on how important it is. This year, those boys are looking at college. Both of them are looking to see what is out there for them as a future. If we didn't have the quick resources, we wouldn't be able to look at that. So I really would like you to look at those. We use it in Hood River with our teen court, with our faith faith connections, everything. It touches everyone in our valley somehow. So I really want to thank you for this opportunity, and I hope you support 5504.
Madam Chair Carter and subcommittee, my name is Dave Giannotti. I am the superintendent of Riddle School District in Southern Oregon. I am also here to support the $3 million in basic capacity support. And the reason I'm here is because of the flexibility that basic capacity support offers our county. As you've heard from different counties all over the state, everybody has a different program. There's a lot of programs here that we share, but others vary. And each county has different needs. In Douglas County, we have different needs. And our local commission is able to sort those out, find out what we need, and help us supply it. And that basic capacity support is what allows them to do that. In our particular area, we have huge issues, like a lot of areas do, with substance abuse, homelessness, poverty. We're rural Oregon, very small timber area, and as a result of problems with the timber industry, a lot of the wealthier or able to afford things kind of people have moved on. And so who are left? The unemployed, people with inadequate housing, people on unemployment, no safe daycare, lack of public transport. We've got a lot of problems. So at our school, what we have is an after-school program. And that after-school program has been funded partly by the Commission on Children and Families, and with the $12,000 to $20,000 that they supply us every year, we are able to leverage $30,000 to impact almost 50% of our school district. It's a huge issue for us. But that $3 million in flexibility is, for our county, is what we need to see. Without it, I know that after-school program will close, and it will have a huge impact on our school district and other schools and other after-school programs, as well as all the other programs you've heard about today. So thank you for supporting those. I appreciate your time.
Thank you, Mrs. Superintendent.
Senator Gordley, thank you. I'd like to ask, this is for the witness from Hood River Valley, and you don't necessarily need to come back. I'm just going to say that I did hear you say that you have the lowest dropout rate in the nation. And
we're one of the lowest
for the Hispanic population. I would be very interested in knowing more about the strategies that you're using to get that result, and would also like to know if those are strategies that have been shared with the Department of Education. If you could communicate that to my office, I would really appreciate it.
Glad to.
Thank you so much.
Barbara Belzer, Allison Kelly. Oh, I'm sorry. No, excuse me, Ms. Kelly. Barbara Belzer, Tim Rush, Andrea Chartel, and Eric Lynn. I'm sorry. Shelley, is this Ina?
E-N-A.
Ina Tilla. We're trying to get all the people from 100 miles and more away.
I'm Barbara Belzer, and I am on the committee of Deschutes County Commission on Children and Families. And the Deschutes... The Deschutes Commission on Children and Families supports the adoption of SB 5504 in its original form. We need the support of the $3 million in additional dollars for basic capacity that would allow our local commission to accomplish its work through the leveraging of resources, partnerships, and funding. And to give you two examples, the first one being having to do with early childhood success. Deschutes County statistics show that 1 in 3 children are not ready for school when they enter kindergarten or first grade. Research shows that children ages 0 to 6 who receive quality child care are much more ready to accomplish in the academic area. Our commission has collaborated with Cook and Jefferson Counties and Central Oregon Partnership to embark on a tri-county child care project to help children prepare for school. OSU and other local resources have joined the partnership to achieve these results over the past 2 years. 73 Central Oregon employers have initiated programs to assist employees with their child care needs. 53 new providers enrolled in the Tri-County program, and high-level trainings were delivered to 107 providers. While the latest Oregon Progress Board benchmark report, these efforts are paying off and the overall trend is improving, we have more work to do. The restoration of basic capacity resources in SB 5504 will allow us to continue this collaboration and to prepare children for school and for life. The juvenile crime prevention, 8 years ago, Deschutes County ranked among the worst counties for juvenile crime referral and recidivism. We have since that time implemented a continuum of evidence-based programs by leveraging juvenile crime prevention funds that reach youngsters from birth to age 18. Attached to the written testimony, there is a list and a comparison of the funding that was available in 2002 versus 2007, and a list of all the programs that were affected by that decrease in funding. And then on the back side of that is a list of the Deschutes County's trends in terms of improvements and also continued challenges for your approval. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Chair Carter and subcommittee members, I'm here to underline a message that's been delivered over and over here today. But just, I'm an executive director of the Relief Nursery in Deschutes County and want to emphasize the importance of that basic capacity funding for the Commission on Children and Families.
Can you give us your name?
Tim Rusk, R-U-S-K.
Thank you.
Mountain Star Relief Nursery started because of the Commission on Children and Families, and their local discretionary funding and basic capacity was an important part of starting our program and early funding So it's been a critical role for the commission to play. I also want to underline some of the points made earlier about the relief nursery programs in general, and that is what I see consistently is a community that stepped up to address issues around child abuse prevention and to take that issue very seriously with volunteer support and local donations. From my perspective as an executive director, it is unbelievable the amount of hope that relief nurseries inspire in children and families and the amount of community investment of organizations like Comcast and others that want to get involved and frankly can't stay away. The third statement is just around the commission's ability to convene groups and organize and create coalitions. That's something that's very active in Deschutes County. I'm the chair of the Professional Advisory Committee, which looks at community issues and creates a systems approach to dealing with issues in our community, and it's just extremely valuable role. Thank you.
Thank you. Madam Chair and members of the subcommittee, my name is Andrea Chartel, and I am a board member of the Deschutes County Commission on Children and Families. My prior life, actually not too long ago, in the 2001-2002 year, I was counsel to the Judiciary Committee here and worked with Bill Taylor, so it's very interesting to be on the other side here and being worried about time and all of the speakers. One of the most interesting things about my move to Deschutes County was I remember when I worked in the session that in the 2001 session and learning about sort of the divide and how people outside of the valley felt like their needs weren't being paid attention to, or that all of the legislation happened around problems that were in the valley. And having grown up in the valley and having worked in the valley, I didn't imagine that it could be that bad. And yet, having lived now in Deschutes County for almost 5 years, it is very interesting how different things look over there. And we were so appreciative of the of Ways and Means to come out to hear from us. But it is a different world, and we do have different problems there. And what's so great about the Commission on Children and Families is that it is local people responding to local problems. And I think if I had the time to tell you about the backgrounds of all of the different people who are on our board and the kind of skills and expertise that they bring to the table and how seriously they take the job of the public funds that they're using. Barbara and I spent the day yesterday looking at requests for over $400,000, and we only had a little over $100,000 to give for just amazing programs that make such difference in people's lives. And each of us does site visits each year to see how that money is spent and make sure that it's spent well. So I can't speak better than the young woman that talked about how the difference in her 8-month-old child. I can't. That's the success. What I can tell you is that the money that you give to local commissions to solve local problems is exactly what your goal is, and you need to continue to fund us. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Shelley Ina?
Yes.
Okay. Chair Carter, I'm Shelley Ina. I'm from Umatilla County, and I'm grateful to be able to speak to the committee today about our local commission on children and families. I would like to say ditto to everything that's been said today. We need the $3 million in basic capacity. I do come from rural eastern Oregon, and we do have a few issues over there. It may be the promised land, but it's not quite meeting up to all of the expectations and needs of all of our families. We act in the Commission on Children and Families as the conveners and facilitators, and we bring people together to figure out what the issues are in our communities. Through the comprehensive community planning process, we are able to locally identify what those issues are and come up with solutions. In Umatilla County, we've developed three main focus issues: early childhood care and education in order to reduce child abuse and neglect,
positive youth development initiatives in order to better serve our youth, and supportive family services in order to best help families raise children who can be productive citizens of our communities. Through these focus areas, several initiatives have been developed. Over the last 5 years or so that I've been the commission director, we've seen the meth issues and epidemic become a drain on all of our human services and the schools as well, and how they have to serve children who are born to families who are meth affected. We have partnered with our faith community and developed programs to assist children, and I gave a packet of letters to you that were written by children who have been served by a specific program called Lost and Found in our community. And I'd just like to ask you to look at some of those letters. There's one especially from a girl named Kayla who I would like to read. It says, "My name is Kayla. When I first came to Lost and Found, I was very depressed. I tried to kill myself. I was taking pills and I was drinking. For the most part, I was dead. Dead inside, I didn't care about anything or anyone. My dad has been in and out of jail. My mom's been in and out of bad relationships, and all my friends were potheads and adults. I barely hung out with anybody my own age, and when I did, it was mostly people who were troublesome. Before I came to Lost and Found, my life meant nothing to me. I can't thank them enough. I really believe that Lost and Found is a good experience to have had, and I believe that if it hadn't come to one group, I probably would have done something I would regret. I believe I would have committed suicide, and I'm really glad that I did come to group. I really enjoy coming to group, whether it's at school or not, it rocks." Heart, Kayla. Now, Kayla is just indicative of one eighth grader. This particular individual program meets the needs of many children in the Pendleton area. But it's also just one program that we support with both juvenile crime prevention dollars and our commission dollars, the locally invested. We have great partners with the faith community, and would like to encourage you to continue to support the Commission on Children and Families so that we can further our solutions for our local communities. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
You.
We have 24 people left, and we have approximately 20 more minutes. Can I ask you to speak from your heart, and you just give us 1 minute so we can try to get as many people as we can? I hope you will feel comfortable incorporating with that, please. I'd appreciate it. Martha Brooks, the Honorable Bernice Burnett, and Mr. Eric Landauer. Quite frankly, this is your committee of experienced people who knows all about your program. So if you just speak from your heart, we know all the programs, we know how effective you are. That's why we make them. We ask you to do Thank you. Just speak from your heart and give us 1 minute so that more people can have something to say. I hope you don't mind.
Thank you, Chair Carter. My name is Martha Brooks, and I'm the State Director for Fight Crime Invest in Kids. And I'll give you a very, very brief overview and then turn it over to District Attorney Barnett and let her give you the highlights. Fight Crime Invest in Kids is Oregon is a bipartisan organization of over 137 police chiefs, sheriffs, district attorneys who believe that preventing crime is important. And one of the ways that we prevent crime is early on and up front through prevention programs such as Healthy Start. The members of Fight Crime believe that dangerous criminals must be put behind bars, but locking them up is not the only answer. We've included in a packet for you several pieces of information. One is a letter that we sent out to all members of both the House and Senate on February 27th or 8th, asking that you go to $6 million increase for a Healthy Start, which is the governor's recommended budget. There's also a letter in there of support from former Governor Victor Atiyah, and then information on why Healthy Start is a child abuse and neglect prevention program. And instead of just waiting for the next horror story to splash across the news, we need to invest now in programs that will save money, prevent crime, and save lives now and for years to come.
Thank you. I'm Denise Garnett from Lincoln County. Thank you, Chair Carter and committee members. And I do want to speak from my heart. I'm not only the district attorney of Lincoln County, which is all about accountability and really making sure that people who have injured, particularly children, we're talking today about, are held accountable. But today I'm here because I'm a member of Fight Crime Invest in Kids. Accompanying me today from Lincoln County is the director of our Lincoln County Commission on Children and Families. That's Barbara Doherty back behind me. And I got to tell you, she is a fine partner, as is the commission, in helping us work to protect kids and prevent crime. I'm going to tell you just a couple of statistics, and they're before you in the writing. And the reason I want to just say them aloud is I think that it's very important that we announce to the world and we keep in our forefront that there's a clear link between child abuse and neglect and crime. And while most children who are abused and neglected never become criminals, we know that the program that we're here to specifically talk about today, Healthy Start, makes a huge difference. It can be less than half of the young people that would end up in that system if they have the advantage of having Healthy Start. I want to tell you one little stat, and it will be in your thing. Think about this. It costs Oregonians $62,415 a year, or $171 a day, to incarcerate a youth. Healthy Start costs approximately $3,000 a year per family, or approximately $8.22 a day. Please consider helping us by helping Healthy Start and doing the $6 million back into the funds that we need. Tough law enforcement is essential. That's my job, but we'll win a victory for the crime only when our commitment to putting dangerous criminals in jail is matched by our commitment to investing in children. Thank you.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, Senator Winters, I come at this from a little different perspective, and I think it is essentially the same. My name is Eric Lindauer, and I am the chair of the Oregon Community Foundation. Our job, your job, is to match state resources with community needs. That's what we're doing, and we've been doing it for 30 years. We have the largest endowment in the state. In the last 30 years, we have put over $500 million in nonprofit organizations throughout the state of Oregon. We're here today to say, look, we're in this together. We want to work with you. We want to be your partner. We have been in the business of children and families from day one. That's the largest outpouring of funds that we have from the foundation. And one of the organizations that we have been proudest to be partners with is the Oregon Commission on Children and Families. We are, just to speak of costs alone, and let me just make a disclosure up front, my daughter is on the commission staff and was, I'm very proud to say, a CASA volunteer. But let me just give you an example of how we can work together on this, how we can be a partner together on this. These foundations who have come together in Oregon, ours being a lead foundation, have brought together all of the foundation to say, look, how can we make a difference? And we put up $400,000 to start this. We're willing to make a commitment of $1.9 million together with you. So what we need is to continue this partnership, Madam Chair. We need to figure out a way how we can really address all of the parade of needs that you have heard today. And we want to be in partnership with you. But the only way we can do that to make sure that we leverage this is for this to be fully funded. The more you can fund this, the more we can leverage it out. Our contribution, our commitment is determinative on what your commitment is. So let's work on this together so that the people that you've heard and the touching stories that you've heard, the funding can be there. And we as a foundation are very anxious to work with you in this. We're the 10th largest foundation in the country. We want to continue to build Oregon. This endowment was established by Oregonians for Oregonians. And there isn't a community in this state, a nonprofit, there's 12,000 nonprofits in the state. And if there isn't a community in the state that the Oregon Community Foundation hasn't touched. Children and families are number one for us. And it should be number one for this state. Let us be partners together. Let us work together. You help us, we'll help you, and we can solve a lot of Oregon's problems. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Madam Chair, excuse me just a minute. Jean Lassiter, Mike Valter, Janet Arendt. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Lindauer, Oregon Community Foundation, the Chalk Board Project.
Yes.
Thank you for your support of the Chalk Board Project.
Absolutely. And that's just one other example of how we can work together collaboratively.
I just want to say thank you.
You bet.
A thousand.
We're in this together.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And Madam Chair, Mr. Lindauer, thank you for all your hard work.
Thank you.
Thank you, Senator.
We had 24 people.
Madam Chair, my name is Jean Lassiter, and I'm with the, I work actually for Looking Glass Youth and Family Services in Eugene, but I work here in Salem. And here's my speech, but it seems like I've been speaking from my heart about this issue of runaway and homeless youth since it started, and since I started working here in Salem. So now what do I do? Anyway.
And I don't mean I heard you listening you speak. I mean that this committee is going to do something.
Okay, thanks. Sorry. I thought you wanted me to be quiet. Thank you very much. You know, we have done some amazing work with this population here in Oregon over the last 4 to 6 years. And we have before us an opportunity to help children that really fall off of our radar screens. They really, really, really are marginalized. They're marginalized in middle school, and they have very little access to the supports we have in place. So I really would ask you to, I don't need to ask you. It's clear that your support is here with us. And we had over 100 young people and adults at a rally here yesterday on the Capitol steps, and that was the first rally ever for runaway and homeless youth. And I'll tell you, that was 1/100th of the number of runaway and homeless youth we have here in the state of Oregon. So I appreciate your support.
I'm just saying to all of you that this committee has put back on its priority list the runaway youth.
Yeah!
Yeah!
Chair Carter and committee members, my testimony will be very short. Thank you.
That was short.
And mine likewise. I'm Mike Walter, Boys and Girls Aid Society. I just wanted to help one thing, Chair Carter, is I want you to think about these kids because they're my kids. And they're the not enough kids. Mm-hmm. You know, that you make an enormous investment in child welfare, and these kids aren't abused enough to enter that system and get help there. You make an enormous investment in the Oregon Youth Authority, and these kids aren't dangerous enough yet to access those resources. And finally, all the wonderful investments you make in education and health care and employment, these kids don't have a stable enough place to live yet to access those resources. So that's helping. I just want to help you remember, these are the kids that are not enough. They're not quite enough, and you can give them that chance, that foundational chance. Thanks very much.
Thank you all for being here. Joseph DeLong, City Fever, Diane Iverson. As you get there, start speaking. I don't want to lose my numbers there.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Peggy Samolinski, and I'm a program manager with Multnomah County, the Department of County Human Services, and we oversee the implementation and development of 54 community schools across six school districts in Multnomah County, and that translates into approximately 1/3 of the county's schools.
I support the governor's budget appropriation to bring the opportunity to establish community schools across the state of Oregon. Community schools is a critical strategy in the county's social service efforts to ensure that kids receive the social services and support they need to succeed academically, and their parents receive the social support they need to be self-sufficient. With community schools, the school becomes a resource for the entire community. The effort is bigger than the school itself. Community schools provide a safe place for youth to be engaged in meaningful activities before and after the school day, an opportunity for students who are at risk for academic failure to participate in activities that will improve their classroom performance and their connection to their school and education, adult mentors who are role models who provide a positive influence in youth's daily life, a place where families can gain access to needed social and support services that can help them stabilize their housing situations and thus reduce the likelihood that they will need to move, and a place for that families can view as supportive and inviting for them to want to be at. Before you is an overview of the Sun Community Schools program in Multnomah County. As you look at the information, I think you will agree that aligning our resources and partnering with schools truly does make a difference. In 2005-2006, our community schools served over 16,000 students and 3,100 adults. Approximately 62% of those kids served were children of color, and nearly 70% were receiving free and reduced lunch across the system. So these are truly the poor kids in our community. Students we served increased benchmark scores in reading and math, had strong school attendance, showed improvement in classroom behavior and youth assets, and families were stabilized and increased their self-sufficiency. Thank you very much.
Madam Chair, and to the committee, I'm Joseph Malone. I'm the principal of Ockley Green Arts and Technology School in Portland, and it's indeed a pleasure to come in and speak to you and share you just a few seconds. We have 445 students at my school. It's 41% African American, 24% Hispanic, 23% European American, the rest are Asian and Native American. The Sun School program, and which I support the governor's initiative on this, Sun School program that provides these after-school and extended programs for our students is very valid for our students and their success in school. And also the 76% that is in our school is free and reduced lunch. And I heard Senator Carter mention when I was in another room about speaking to the choir. I understand that. So I just want you all to go back and sing some more verses and chorus to the people that are there. So I appreciate that. Thank you.
Welcome. Good afternoon. My name is Sadie Feibel, Manager of After School Programs and Sun Community Schools for Self-Enhancement, Inc., SEI, in Portland. I've been involved with Sun Community Schools in Multnomah County since 1999 and know firsthand the value and the importance of the role of the site manager within a community school. I currently manage 5 Sun Community School sites for SEI. Community schools present a unique opportunity to develop partnerships and leverage resources to support education within a school community. The baseline funding for a Sun Community School is nearly $90,000, but this doesn't come close to accounting for the value of the services delivered. At Ockley Green, for example, that you just heard Mr. Malone speak about, our site coordinator of the Sun School there leverages and coordinates over $222,000 worth of additional services to youth and families. In our Sun Community Schools, we have the honor of walking hand-in-hand with our public schools, local governments, and over 40 organizations and businesses, as well as hundreds of parents, grandparents, students, and graduates, teachers, and retired educators to provide a system of services to uplift youth and communities. I support community schools, and the governor's initiative is a solid start to bring community schools to all communities in Oregon. I urge you to support the funding. Thank you.
Thank you. Diane Iverson, retired Portland, Oregon. I spent the last 30 years working as a public sector employee, half of it as a classroom teacher in Redmond, Oregon, and the other half as a state agency manager for this state agency and Multnomah County government. And I have learned through the 30 years on the ground that we do great work in the public sector, but we do not always do it holding hands together. We oftentimes do it in isolation of each other. I have become a strong believer in the community school movement and have worked with this wonderful team before you in helping put it on the ground in Multnomah County.
Why should we align state and federal and county resources around the community school movement? Because we receive better outcomes, better services, and it's a better use of taxpayers' dollars. We found in Multnomah County last spring that the community comes and speaks on behalf of the strategy because it works. And in 4 days' time, 500 to 700 children and families came and testified before our Board of County Commissioners saying how much community schools work for them. I urge you to support the governor's budget of $1 million so that we can look at state agency resources and the Department of Education and the Commission on Children and Families and Department of Human Services and align those resources around a common goal of keeping kids in school. Thank you.
Thank you. We will hear one more panel, and I apologize for those of you who've come that we were not able to hear you. So I'd like to call Kayla Kennedy, Don Schweitzer, Gloria Griffith, and Allison Kelly. And I apologize to the rest of you for whom we did not get a chance to hear.
I'll just start in the interest of time. Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I'm Allison Kelly. I'm an attorney and mediator with a practice based here in Salem. I am also an adjunct professor of public administration with Portland State University. I speak to you from those perspectives. I have had an opportunity to work with the Marion County Children and Families Commission, many of their projects, and I'm well aware of the types of interventions and prevention, everything that they do and the leveraging that they've done. I'm here today on my own time on behalf of these issues to urge you to support 5504 and the $3 million in basic capacity, the $2 million to roll out the relief nurseries. I'm here today because I'm appalled at the types of things that happen to children in this state. The abuse, the physical abuse, the sexual abuse, the neglect, the trauma prevent these children from succeeding. They need help in order to overcome that residual trauma so that they can learn and can take advantage and can create a future for themselves. Investing in the commission system and the basic capacity will directly address the types of needs they have and will also protect your investment in the K-12 education. So thanks for hearing me today.
My name is Don Schweitzer. I'm the program coordinator for Northwest Human Services Host Youth and Family Program. We have emergency shelter and transitional living program for runaway and homeless youth. With that said, I think I'd like to yield the rest of my time to the next speaker.
Thank you. Hi, my name is Kayla Kennedy, and I'm 17. I have a full-time job, and I'm close to getting my GED so I can go to college. My mom and I moved to Salem from a small town in Kansas in May of 2005. And when we got here, we found ourselves totally alone. We didn't know the city. And things didn't go exactly as we'd planned. My mom ended up losing all income she'd been getting from the business that she owned in Kansas. And for months, she managed to somehow scrape together enough money to make sure we had food to eat and a place to live. But my mom could only do so much, and eventually what happened to us was beyond our control. I came into the host shelter a week before my 16th birthday and ended up spending almost 6 months there before I could get into the long-term transitional living program. Both of these were extremely beneficial to me, helping me connect with the school system, helping me to get a job, and to get health care and counseling. My goal is to move out and get my own apartment within a few months. But this isn't about me. I got the help that I needed, and I can be counted among the successes of the system, unlike so many kids in my situation. When it comes down to it, I got lucky. I was lucky to be in a city that had a system of services that I could use, and I was lucky to meet somebody who knew about them. When I go home tonight, I will be lucky to have a bed to sleep in, but most of the homeless youth in the state won't be as lucky as I am. Most of them will be sleeping outside, sleeping on someone's couch, even compromising themselves to simply have a place to be overnight. For too long, we've been calling to have a change in the system, and today I can tell you exactly what I want, exactly what 24,000 homeless kids in the state want, and exactly what all of our allies want. Through the full funding of OCCF, we want to make sure that no child in the state has to get lucky to have a place to sleep at night and to have food to eat, and to have a chance in a future to achieve all the things that they want in life. For that funding, we want to build a system where no child in any community in the state is going to be left without a place to sleep on any night. Thank you.
Wow. Thank you so much.
Good afternoon, Chair Carter and members of the committee. My name is Gloria Griffith. I am the project coordinator for the Springfield and the Marcola School Districts. I also coordinate the homeless program for the Springfield School District. I'm here on behalf of all the kids and the families that access family centers and also all of those youth who are unaccompanied and find themselves homeless and without family support. I'm going to quickly tell you the story of Pablo because he asked me, he called me this morning to make sure I was going to tell you his story. He's 16, almost 17 years old. He's attended school off and on over the years and has not consistently attended because he needs to stay home and help his mother off and take care of younger siblings. This year he is a sophomore, but he only has a few credits, not enough to pass into the 11th grade. So he decided a couple of weeks ago not to attend school at all because it's the end of the year and what good would it do? He ended up at our family center looking for an opportunity to do community service hours. We have a collaborative effort with the local Youth Restorative Justice Program. Youth who have minor offenses can pay back by putting in community service hours and helping out at the family centers, either with the free clothing exchange program or other general tasks. In getting to know Pablo and his family story, we have been able to help him beyond his community service hours. Because of our relationship with the school district, we have started the process for him to do some credit recovery through one of our alternative high schools so that next fall he will be able to enroll in school as a junior. He's pretty excited about this and says he will go to school and attend. We've been meeting with his mother to find ways to get his younger siblings to and from school so that Pablo can go to school next year to get to class on time and stay the full school day. We are also helping his mother access a variety of community services. So that's Pablo's story. I'm happy I was able to tell it. I'm here to encourage you to look at the $3 million for building capacity through the Commission on Children and Families. And thank you so much.
Thank you very, very much. We have another committee that is meeting in here. Otherwise, we could have stayed a little longer. But I want to thank you very much. Those of you who come from all over the state to talk to us. We were on the road, and in being on the road, we are very blessed as a state that our revenue picture looked up, and so we're grateful for that. And it looking up, we're able to hopefully do some things differently and consequently better than what we were able to do prior to the revenue picture looking like it is today. So thank you again, committee members, for coming, and I do know that you have other committees you have to attend as well. So if there's anyone out here with testimony that you did not, because you didn't get a chance to hear, please give it right here to the lady in the blue and white striped shirt. And again, we apologize, but thank everybody very much for coming today.